So you've been diving deep into the world of sports-related concussions. And, well, we know you wouldn't have picked this topic if it wasn't important. It's a big deal, tons of research, constantly changing stuff, got to keep upright.
It really is fascinating, isn't it? The whole landscape of concussion understanding has shifted so much, even in just the last few years. It's amazing how much we're learning.
Totally. Okay, so let's break it down for our listeners. When we talk about sports injuries, what makes a concussion different from, say, a sprained ankle?
Well, you see, a concussion is a brain injury, and we're talking about something that's happening at a microscopic level.
Microscopic, huh?
Yeah, it's not like a broken bone where you can just take an X-ray and boom, there it is. With concussions, you're dealing with intricate changes in the brain itself. You can't even see those on a standard MRI.
Wow. An invisible injury. Kind of spooky when you think about it like that.
Exactly, and that's what makes early recognition so crucial.
I can see why.
And that's one reason why the International Conference on Concussion and Sport, they're the big leagues when it comes to this stuff. They keep updating their guidelines. In fact, they recently released their sixth consensus statement.
Sixth. Wow. They must have uncovered some major breakthroughs to put out a whole new edition.
Oh, they did. This latest one, which came from their meeting in Amsterdam in 2022, digs deep into over 3.5 years of brand new research.
Okay, now we're talking. So what's the big headline from all of this? How are they defining concussions now?
Well, they're really hitting home this idea that, like I said, it's a brain injury. It's an injury that happens on this tiny microscopic scale. It's not just a bump on the head, you know. We're talking about a force that sets off this whole chain reaction inside your brain, and that affects everything. How your brain cells are talking to each other, blood flow, inflammation, the whole nine yards.
Wow.
And get this, it doesn't even have to be a direct hit to the head. That force can travel from an impact to your neck or even your body, believe it or not.
So what you're saying is, even a hit that looks pretty minor from the outside, it could still cause a concussion.
Exactly. And to make things even trickier, the symptoms, well, they can be all over the map. They
Yeah.
vary from person to person, and they might not even show up right away.
Oh man, that's got to make those sideline assessments so much more important.
Absolutely. And that's actually one of the areas where they've made some pretty big changes that the actual tools use to diagnose these concussions. Are you familiar with the Sport Concussion Assessment Tool? It's called SCAT for short.
I've heard of it. In fact, I think I even tried taking it online once just out of curiosity. It's pretty
The tool
detailed.
is.
But I'm guessing the experts weren't content to just let it get stale and outdated. What's new with it?
Well, they actually made it even tougher.
Tougher.
Yeah, we're on version 6 now, SCAT 6, and there's a whole new tool that's been designed specifically for doctors called the Sport Concussion Office Assessment Tool, SCOUT 6.
Hold on, two different tools.
Yeah.
Isn't that like asking for confusion?
Not at all. Think of it this way. SCAT 6 is kind of like your first responder, right? On the sidelines, right when a potential injury happens, boom, you need something quick and effective. SCAT 6, that's more like your specialist at the hospital, right? It's for the much deeper dive once things have settled down a bit.
Okay, that makes more sense. Different tools for different stages.
Yeah.
So what's actually new about SCAT 6? Did they finally get rid of those ridiculously long word lists that everyone struggles to remember?
Funny you should mention that they actually made them longer.
You're kidding.
Nope. It turns out some athletes, especially those used to memorizing playbooks and all that, they were like acing the old tests.
Wow, talk about brains. So they had to step up their game to really challenge them.
Exactly. So now they've added in a 10-word list and they ditched that easier 5-word one. But they're also emphasizing that at the end of the day, these tools, they don't replace a doctor's expertise. They're more like high-tech tools in a skilled craftsperson's hands.
I like that analogy.
Yeah.
So we've talked about how they're defining concussions these days, the updated tools for spotting them. But what about stopping them before they even happen? That feels like the Holy Grail, right?
Absolutely. Prevention is key. And one of the most fascinating things emerging from the research is the impact of actually changing the rules of the game.
Wait, seriously, we're not just talking fancy new helmets here.
Helmets are essential, don't get me wrong. But research is suggesting that changing the rules themselves can be even more effective in preventing these injuries.
Really?
Take youth hockey, for example. When they got rid of body checking, you know what happened? Concussions plummeted.
Okay, how much are we talking? Like a small dip or a real game changer?
A 58% reduction in concussions.
58%? Are you serious?
Yeah, and what's even more interesting is it didn't even lead to more concussions when those kids moved up to higher levels of hockey where checking is allowed.
Wow.
It's like those early years without the big hits, they actually made a real difference in building safer habits.
Wow, that's a powerful argument for those kinds of rule changes.
It is. And, you know, it's not just hockey.
Ah.
American football is another great example. They found that by simply limiting contact during practice, especially those full-on collision drills they used to do,
Yeah.
they slashed practice-related concussions by a staggering 64%.
54. You're kidding.
It's true. It all comes down to shifting that whole culture of how we train and how we play, recognizing that, hey, every hit has a consequence.
Smarter practice, safer players. That's incredible. It's amazing how those smaller strategic changes can sometimes be the catalyst for massive positive change. But I'm guessing rule changes aren't the only trick up their sleeve when it comes to preventing these injuries. What else are they finding? It's amazing how those smaller strategic changes can sometimes be the catalyst for massive positive change. But I'm guessing rule changes aren't the only trick up their sleeve when it comes to preventing these injuries. What else are they finding?
You're right, it's not just about big policy changes. They found that something as simple as wearing a mouth guard can actually reduce concussion rates in ice hockey by 28%.
Seriously, I always figured those were more about like saving your teeth, but I guess it makes sense they'd absorb some of the impact, right?
Exactly. It's such a simple thing to implement, and it can make a real difference. Another area that's showing some real promise is neuromuscular training.
Okay, that one sounds a little more intense. Break it down for me. What is that?
It's actually pretty straightforward. Think of it like a super specialized warm-up routine. It's all about focusing on things like your balance, your coordination, how quickly you react. You're basically training your brain and body to work together seamlessly so that if you do take a hit, trip, you're less likely to end up in that awkward position where you could get a concussion.
So it's like giving your body's software an upgrade to help avoid those system crashes. I like it.
That's a great way to put it. And they've seen fantastic results with this kind of training in rugby, and the research is growing for other sports too.
That's awesome. It's so encouraging to see so much emphasis on prevention. But, you know, let's be real, concussions still happen. So what's the latest on treatment when they do? What's the best approach these days?
This is where things get really interesting. Remember the old days when they'd basically just tell an athlete, go hole up in a dark room and wait it out?
Oh, yeah, the old cocoon in a dark room approach. I remember being told to do that years ago after I had a concussion. It's funny how much things have changed, even just in the last like decade or two. So is that still a thing?
Not so much anymore. Turns out that's not actually the best approach.
Oh, really?
Yeah, these days it's all about relative rest.
Relative rest. Okay, so what does that look like?
So it means taking it easy for the first 24 to 48 hours after the injury. Some light activity, like walking around, that kind of thing, that's okay. But it's best to minimize screen time, any kind of, bright lights,
Right.
overstimulation, that kind of thing. The research is starting to suggest that a little bit of activity can actually be beneficial for recovery. It's almost like your brain needs to keep some of those pathways firing, but just gently.
Right. So not total shutdown, but also not just back to your regular routine just yet. It's about finding that middle ground.
Exactly. They're even using something called sub-symptom threshold aerobic exercise as a treatment tool these days.
Okay, now you're just using big words to sound smart. Come on, break that one down for me. Sub-symptom threshold. What does that even mean?
It's actually simpler than it sounds, I promise. It basically just means that you're doing some light aerobic exercise, like walking or cycling, maybe, but you're doing it at a level where your concussion symptoms don't flare up.
Okay.
So you're still getting your heart rate up a little bit, but you're not pushing it so hard that you feel worse.
Right. So listening to your body is still a big part of it.
Absolutely. Everyone recovers differently, and working with a healthcare professional to figure out the right pace for you, that's essential.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. No one size fits all when it comes to something as complex as the brain. So let's say an athlete has had that relative rest. They're starting to feel a bit more like themselves. When can they get back to their regular routine? You know, things like school and, of course, the sport that they love.
Right. That's where the Return to Learn RTL and Return to Sport RTS strategies come in. And just like with that initial rest phase, it's all about taking a very gradual, step-by-step approach.
So even if an athlete is like champing at the bit to get back in the game, it's about like pump the brakes just a little bit.
Exactly. The name of the game is gradual progression. And both RTL and RTS, they're completely individualized based on how that athlete is feeling. And any sign of those symptoms coming back, boom, it's time to take a step back and let the brain recover.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. So what does this like RTL thing actually look like in practice?
It's all about easing back into those learning activities. So that could be starting with just a few minutes of homework, maybe, and then slowly building up to longer periods of studying, reading, whatever their schoolwork involves.
Gotcha. And then RTS follows a similar strategy, but with like physical activity instead of the academics.
You got it. It often starts with that light aerobic exercise we were talking about, and then progresses to more sport-specific drills. And then finally, when the athlete is truly ready, back to full contact, practice, and games.
So it's like a carefully designed on-ramp with plenty of checkpoints along the way to make sure the athlete is really ready for that next level.
Exactly. And research is showing that this gradual approach, it's crucial. Athletes who try to rush back too soon, they actually risk a longer recovery time and even more problems down the line. It's a good reminder that patience is more than just a virtue. It's essential for recovery.
That's for sure. Speaking of the long term, there's been a lot of talk lately about the long-term impacts of concussions, especially these repeated head impacts, things like CTE and other neurological issues. Scary stuff. What's the latest on that front? What did the folks at this Amsterdam conference have to say about all that? So all this talk about long-term impacts, did the Amsterdam conference offer any new insights into like what we know, what we don't know, and what's still being figured out?
It's a huge area of concern, and rightfully so. And, you know, while the science is still developing, we are learning more and more about the long-term effects of repeated head impact.
Okay, so let's break it down for our listeners. What's the current consensus on this?
Well, one thing is very clear. There's a definite link between those repeated head impacts and a higher risk of developing neurological conditions later on. Things like chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE.
Right.
That's one you've probably heard of.
Yeah, that's the one that's been in the news a lot, right?
Yeah.
Affecting former football players, other athletes.
Exactly. And it's a degenerative brain disease, so we're talking serious stuff here, impacting memory, mood swings, behavioral changes, even dementia in some cases.
Heavy stuff. Mm-hmm. So for someone out there who's listening, who's passionate about sports, but also, you know, about protecting their brain for the long haul, what's the takeaway here?
I think it goes right back to those prevention strategies we were talking about earlier. You know, it's not just about reducing concussions in the moment. It's about protecting your brain over a lifetime. Every hit, even the ones that don't seem like a big deal at the time, has the potential to add up.
Wow.
And, you know, by minimizing those impacts, we're not just making sports safer today. We're safeguarding brain health for the future.
That is a really powerful way to look at it. It's not just about playing through the pain. It's about, like, really respecting the power of this amazing organ we have and protecting it for the long game.
Absolutely. And, you know, the research is evolving all the time. One thing they really emphasized at the Amsterdam conference was the need for more inclusive research moving forward.
That's what I mean, exactly.
Well, for a long time, concussion research has focused primarily on male athletes, especially in those, you know, professional leagues. But the reality is concussions don't discriminate, right?
Right.
We need to understand how these injuries are affecting everyone, different ages, genders, ethnicities, levels of play.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Everyone deserves to have their experiences reflected in the research, right?
Yeah.
And to have the best possible care, no matter who they are, what level they're playing at.
100%. And, you know, one more thing I'll add that really resonated with me from this conference was just the focus on the human side of concussions.
Beyond the science and the stats, it's ultimately about people, right?
Exactly. They had a whole section on the ethical considerations, especially those tough decisions athletes face when it comes to, you know, retiring from a sport that they love.
Man, that's got to be one of the hardest calls for an athlete to make.
It is. And they stressed over and over again that it shouldn't be a decision made in isolation. It has to be a team effort, right? Mm-hmm. Involving the athlete, their family, doctors, coaches, everyone coming together to weigh the risks and the benefits. And not just for the athlete's physical well-being, their emotional, mental health as well. You know, the whole picture. There's no easy answer, and it's going to be different for everyone.
It's a good reminder that there's a whole lot of heart in this, too. And wow, we've really covered a ton of ground here today, from the nitty-gritty science of concussions to that very real human impact these injuries have.
So for our listener who clearly, you know, wants to be as informed as possible about all this, what are your final thoughts? What would you say to them as we wrap things up here? Stay curious, stay informed, and don't be afraid to ask questions. This is a constantly evolving field, as we've said, and the more we know, the better equipped we are to protect ourselves and those we care about.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Knowledge is power, especially when it comes to something as important as brain health. So to our listener out there, thanks for taking this deep dive with us. Keep asking those good questions, keep learning, and stay safe out there.